Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins. Thank you very much for joining us on another beautiful episode. Hopefully you're having a good day with whatever it is you're doing. I'm, winding up my work day here at a new job, which I've told you about, and I'm feeling much better about it. I know earlier on, like maybe about a month or so ago, I was expressing some anxiety on my end that I was regretting my decision to leave one job and do the job that I'm doing now, but it's coming to fruition now. I'm feeling more confident. I'm liking everything, and it feels good, you know, like to be able to make a decision, try it out, and then be like, oh, that was the right move. It feels good. But anyways, the guest this week, it's a very, very special one because it's a close friend of mine who I've been looking to have on the show for quite some time. And frankly, she doesn't do interviews. She is the person who is setting up interviews. This is my good friend, Stephanie Marlowe. She runs a publicity company out of her own name, Stephanie Marlowe PR. And she does PR for basically every band you've probably listened to at some point in the past 10 years. From Def Heaven to, Have Heart, like whatever. We get really, really deep into who she's worked with in the past. But she has a very, very interesting history. She's worked at Victory Records. She's done stuff with Bridge 9. And now she does her own PR firm, like I mentioned. And she keeps it real. She's helped me out a lot in the past. She did PR for a festival that I used to do with Joey called Sound and Fury. And I don't know, just a great human being. And she has so many cool insights to share. And that's exactly why she's on the show. So that's, yes, it gives me all the warms and fuzzies when I'm able to bring friends on and share their wisdom with you. Because after all, I know that's what a lot of feedback I get from people is that they enjoy when I'm having these people who are really, really good at their jobs and like how they got started and kind of seeing a roadmap. Because, I mean, after all, none of us really know how to get to our destination. You know, when you're like 16, 17 years old, you're like, oh, I want to work at a record label. I want to do that. You have no idea how to actually accomplish those goals. So hearing how people do it kind of gets your brain ticking, gets you moving in the right direction. So I am just getting over some horrific food poisoning, so I apologize if I'm sounding a little less energetic or stuffy or whatever, but I don't know, got a bad batch of beans, and it ruined me, and I was out of commission for what it felt like a month, but it was only a week. So now I'm feeling better, and without further delay, let's talk to Stephanie, and I will talk to you after the episode is over.
We'll be right back. I usually start these things off with just my personal entry point to kind of, you know, you and everything that you are as a human being and professionally and everything. So, I mean, obviously, Matt Moody, your old roommate slash my old bandmate, was our introduction point. But I can't recall. I think it was when we came through with Makoto. It was the first time that we really kind of spent time together, because I met you at fests, I think, in the past when I was working at Century, right?
Yeah, we had hung out, I think, like, you and I were always, like, one degree of separation from each other. Like, I want to say the first time we met maybe was at, like, a metal fest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right,
In New Jersey, maybe? I don't even, or yeah. Was it in Massachusetts? I don't know.
Right, I definitely remember, because obviously you were good friends with one of my old coworkers too, Stacy, that's where I think I first met you. So it was like, yeah, early 2000s. But it was always one of those things where you, I'm going to, blow smoke up your ass right now, so just be prepared. But you always struck me as a, very warm and accommodating person in general. And like, not even particularly like towards me, but just kind of in general. Is this something that like you've noticed in yourself? Like, I don't know. It's just a very, I don't want to say it's like inherently unique in you, but at the same time, it's like not everybody needs to be like warm, I guess. Like, you could be nice, but there's that extra element of being warm. So I don't know if that's something you've noticed in yourself, or that's just, where does that come from?
I appreciate that. I do agree with you that like warmth isn't something that's a characteristic that's necessarily typical of a lot of people that work in our industry. That being said, I mean, I'm from the Midwest. We're generally warm people, parents are really nice and cool and friendly. And I think that was just a trait that was, I was exposed to at a very young age, and just, I like people. I wouldn't be able to do my job if I didn't like people and being around people. So it's not a fake thing. It definitely comes from a very genuine place.
Yeah, because I think it's very, I mean, I was going to address this a little bit later on, but I think because the notion, obviously, of sort of PR in general, and, you could obviously lump in the music industry as a whole as well, is the notion that you have to be, the whole concept of networking and schmoozing and, like, I know that gives people like you and myself, like, just such gross vibes, but it's like, it almost seems part and parcel, where it's like you feel like you have to do that, but then, like you said, kind of at the core of it is just you got to care about a person.
Of course. I remember when I first got started working in music, one of the best pieces of advice that I was ever given was be nice to everyone all the time. Because it's like, you never know, like everyone that I come across, everyone that I meet through work and even beyond, it's like, I'm nice to everyone, because like 10 years from now, who knows where I'm going to be or where they're going to be, and if we still have a working relationship together. And it's like, if you're a dick to someone off the bat, they're going to remember that, So it's like, I don't know. I think it goes, being nice to people goes a lot further than, just surface level, like, pleasantries,
Right. Like, I see a common symptom of people kind of treating everybody exactly the same. Because I think there's a difference between, like, being nice to everybody and then treating everybody like your best friend, like, hey, buddy, like that whole just like, whoa, dude, like, I don't need all of that, like, coming from you right now. Like, you can treat me like a normal human being and not just this, this facade of like, I'm the nicest person of all time.
Yeah.
It doesn't,
that's a slime ball, like, yeah, hey, we're best friends, let's fucking shake hands,
No, for sure. Like you mentioned, you were born and raised in the Midwest. Where in particular? Was it in the Chicago area, or where did you come up?
In the Chicago area. So my parents are both from Chicago, moved to the suburbs when I was a kid. Very, normal, boring, whatever. As soon as I turned 18, though, I got the hell out of the suburbs. Moved back to the city, being Chicago, and then had been there kind of ever since. I've moved around a little bit, as you know, but yeah, most of my life has been spent in Chicago. I love being here. My family's here. It's really nice being kind of centrally located in the United States, I think, because I go to New York often, I go to Los Angeles often, I go to Boston often, and it's like a flight from Chicago to those places is like 2 or 3 hours. So it's not, it's not like a full day of traveling. I'm not, sitting on an airplane for 5 hours, I'm able to get where I need to go easily and quickly. And it's a good place to live.
Yeah,
I think
it's a hub.
It is a hub.
And so what you have, correct me, you have a younger sister, correct?
I do. I have a younger sister and an older sister.
Okay. So you're the middle child.
Yes, I am.
You had to get your parents' attention by acting out.
No, I was, like I said, my childhood was really like normal and kind of boring. I'd never really acted out. I guess I'm not a typical middle child.
Right.
Just kind of like, yeah, whatever, I'm here, you know.
Sure. And what were your parents doing at the time as you were kind of, you know, being raised professionally?
My dad was, he recently retired, but he was like a shipping and logistics coordinator for a trucking company. Nothing super cool or interesting. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom.
Got it. So she had, well, yeah, obviously she had her hands full with three girls running around the house.
Yeah. That's enough to make anyone.
Yeah. So your dad was completely outnumbered.
Oh yeah. So still is. He has grandkids, granddaughters, you know, no men in sight except for his sons-in-law.
That's funny. That's always it's an interesting vibe how that, tends to, I've noticed in other friends that have that sort of makeup of, you know, completely surrounded by women. It totally has a tendency to, no matter what that father's upbringing was like, to soften them, you know, to be the point where it's like they obviously are more kind of in tune to feelings or emotions in some ways that maybe you know, other people of that same generation aren't.
Oh god, completely. He's had no choice.
That's true. He's like, I can either be on my island and just kind of be stoic, or like I can get in the fray.
Yeah, poor guy. What a guy.
And so you describe your upbringing as very kind of, I guess, typical, but and suburban. But what kind of person did you find yourself as you started to, you know, get into high school and start to develop kind of your own identities and interests and everything like that? Like, were you into sports, or were you basically, was music kind of your thing? Where did you find yourself?
Yeah, you know, honestly, music was always my thing. Like, I guess I got an interest in like subculture, if you will, like my probably freshman, sophomore. No, I'm sorry. It was like eighth grade. Started like, you know, listening to The Cure and like, I don't know. I was just immediately, you know, attracted to kind of subculture, and then started getting into like punk when I was in high school, like freshman, sophomore year. And like, I guess my form of rebellion was that, like, you know, on school nights, my parents didn't want me to go to shows and whatnot. So I would like, you know, sneak out and like go to the Fireside Bowl and go see punk bands. And I would come home super late, like just like reeking of like cigarettes, because that's when you could smoke inside. And my parents had to know that I wasn't out like studying, but whatever. But yeah, I was just kind of immediately drawn to it. And music became like an honest to God passion. As I'm sure it's not unique to me, but you know, once I was introduced to it, I kind of like had to dig, and like I wanted to find out everything that I could about these bands and like these record labels. And I would like, you know, handwrite letters and get stickers and catalogs and order shit. And like, it became kind of like more than a hobby. It was like, not like an obsession, but kind of an obsession. It's just like, I wanted to find out everything that I could, and I did. And the more I got into it, the more I loved it. And I guess here I am now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like my career.
What was your, like, who was kind of exposing you to that stuff? Like, you know, was it your older sibling, or was it just kind of your friends around you?
Both, I guess. Like my, you know, my older sister, she's 2 years older than me. Her friends, like, I would kind of tag along with them, but I was, you know, like the freshman, like loser kid. But some of her friends were like surface level into, like punk and whatnot. And then, you know, it just became like, obviously, you know, you go to school and you're wearing a t-shirt, especially at this time, you know, and then like, there's some kid who's like, oh, holy shit, I've heard of that band. Like, let's talk. And then, you know, you just kind of network that way. And then I kind of had assembled a group of friends where we all, you know, lived in neighboring suburbs, and we would all like borrow our parents' cars and drive to shows when we weren't supposed to, and then try to get home before curfew. And, you know,
yeah, I always find it funny, because the, you know, suburban upbringing in regards to like, you know, curfews and like how you basically tried to like get the most out of whatever that curfew may be. So say it's 11, obviously you're going to the show until, you know, 10:45, when you're like, I gotta go right now in order to get home by 11.
Yeah. Lots of nights like that where I come home, my parents were just waiting up for me. Now that, I mean, everyone being like my siblings, my parents now think it's hilarious, because it's something that I've literally built my career off of. But at the time it was, you know, lots of like yeah, our project went late, and sorry, my friend's mom, their dogs got set on fire, and now I'm, you know.
Right. Yeah. What excuses can I come up with on the drive over there?
Of course, yeah. So.
Did you focus on school? Was school, like, interesting to you as far as learning, or was it kind of like, I just can't wait to get out of here?
I love school. I still love school, which is weird and lame, I guess. But I was always a really good student, you know, like, on a roll and did really well. So my parents couldn't really, like, get on my case too much because I was, you know, I had really good grades and whatnot. So I love school. Like I said, I still like school. I take extracurricular classes here and there. I like foreign language and whatnot. It's just, I don't know. I think it's fun. I like learning. I was really good at like language and communication and stuff. Again, things that I use every day with my job. So it's a good thing I was good at.
Right. Yeah. So you weren't the math and science person. You were definitely more so the I guess, for lack of a better term, creative arts.
Yes, absolutely.
Got it. Once you started to obviously consume this subculture and start to go to shows and start to notice all of the things that happen within the scene and stuff like that, was it one of those things, like, obviously it's intimidating for anybody of any age to kind of start going to shows, but then obviously you being a female and kind of like, oh, like, there's a lot of dudes here, like, you know, was there any semblance of that thought process going through your head where it was just like, oh, I seem to be in the minority when I'm going to these shows?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess it was something I noticed, but it was something I just never cared about and I still don't care about. I actually get asked kind of often, you know, like, what's it like being a woman working in music and this, that, and the other thing? And it's like, I actually don't even notice. I've never experienced anything negative. I've never necessarily felt out of place or weird. I've never personally experienced any kind of, like, sexism in that regard. And when I was younger, I just thought I was super cool, like, super cool girl, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, you definitely, I mean, just knowing you as well as I do, you definitely give off a vibe where it's like you can not only, whatever, hang with the dudes, but then you can obviously, you know, you are a female and you can hang out with your female friends. Like, there, whereas obviously there are some females that it's like, it's harder to kind of, you know, be with the guys, be like, oh, I don't know. I don't really have anything to talk to them about beyond just this one particular band or whatever the case may be. But it seems like you could kind of flip between the two, and it was relatively easy for you to do that.
Oh, for sure. And actually, like, the coolest part of it is from that, I met several or many other like-minded women like myself who felt the same way. And through that have made some of the best friends of my whole life, you know, girlfriends, that is. So,
Yeah, no, it's cool.
It's awesome. Yeah.
And because it's always easy to look at the idea of or whatever the common I'm trying to think of the appropriate word where it's like, oh, you're a girl going to a show. It's like, oh, your boyfriend must be playing, and like that whole because it's like, I mean, it's so funny where it's just like, whatever, you know, when I was 15, that I noticed that being a thing, and then it still permeates, you know, some 20 odd years later, where it's just like, oh, the only reason a girl can attend a show is like if their, you know, significant other is there and or playing. It's like, they could probably be into that music as well, right?
Of course, yeah. I mean, I always call bullshit on that. If anyone's like, oh, is your boyfriend here? It's like, no, it's fine. I, you know, I'm legitimately into this stuff, and just kind of like brush it off. It's just, I don't know. It's almost like a waste of breath at that point.
Right, right. It's, yeah, you, like, you don't even want to address it because it's just like, what? I don't know.
It doesn't even need to be addressed, right? In my opinion, at least.
It's a waste of your time.
Yeah.
And so then as you started to graduate, you know, have your eyes set on, you know, graduation and start to look for career options and that sort of stuff, where did you find yourself gravitating towards? Or was it the idea of like, I want to work with music in some capacity?
So I had no idea. So I graduated high school. I went to community college for 2 years. Like I said, I had like moved from the suburbs into the city because I, you know, wanted to be around, you know, friends and shows and, you know, things like that. But, I actually had no idea what I wanted to do. And, had kind of just like run the gamut of like waitressing, bartending, you know, just kind of whatever bullshit entry-level jobs. And then I saw, I don't even think it was Craigslist. I think it was before Craigslist, somewhere on the internet, on the bowels of the internet, I had found a job listing for, like a secretary position at a record label in Chicago. And so I was like 2 years deep in school. I'd been kind of like, didn't know what I wanted to do. I was kind of getting bored with it. Thought I was just kind of spinning my wheels, was more interested in working. And so, I stopped going to school because I found that job listing and I applied for it. And it was for a record label in Chicago, as I'm sure you know, which is how you met me. Mm-hmm. and that was, I stopped going to school and then started working. And, yeah, here I am.
That's great. Okay, so I didn't know that you started out as a secretary there. I mean, I knew that obviously there was an entry point for you, but I didn't know that that was the entry point. That's funny.
Yeah, it's crazy also because I was not like an intern or anything. I just mm-hmm. got an office job there.
Right. Well, and it's funny too because like I think most people, job listings obviously still happen within the independent music industry, but it's so rare. Like,
yeah.
Because it's like, it's not like, especially these sort of highly coveted jobs within a record label, it's usually like, oh yeah, here's like, you know, a digital assistant that will put in metadata for hours at a time, you know, like that's a job listing, but then you would never see something. I mean, even though an administrative assistant, secretary, whatever, like that position would still be like probably not listed as often as you would imagine.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's usually kind of like, you know, promoting from within or who you know. And I just got lucky and stumbled upon it and applied and got the job.
And then got the job. Yeah. So the did you ever have any desire to like, I guess like play in a band or like do a zine or like any of those other sort of, you know, extracurricular activities like beyond just like going to the show? Or like how were you trying to, because you were consuming so much of it, how are you trying to, I guess, get even more involved?
You know, prior to actually working at a record label, I never did anything that like took off. Like a couple of my friends like kind of started a half-assed zine where we would like write record reviews and stuff. But, you know, it didn't get any further than like pretty much like our circle of friends. And mm-hmm. I had never really booked any shows because I already knew everyone who did that stuff. Right. You know, like my friends were already doing it. So I was just kind of around it.
Right. So you were able to observe kind of everybody you knew was already doing something and you're just like, oh, I don't know where I fit. If I am like looking at this in the professional terms, like where would I go?
Right. And then I legitimately just got a job like at a record label as, you know, a secretary as my entry point, which is bizarre now that I'm saying it out loud.
For sure. Was it once you started to work there, was it and I'm putting a pause here. Just you obviously do not want to mention the label name. Is that correct?
Oh, no, we can.
Okay. No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure I was picking up on your cues, but we will. Anyways, unpause. So, I mean, that because was that like early 2000s, so like 2001-ish or so that you started working for Victory?
Correct. It was in 2001.
Okay. And so, I mean, at that time, it was so... the label was obviously in that sort of weird transition phase of being like, hey, we are the absolute powerhouse of, you know, independent hardcore and punk. And it was like, I mean, I can't tell you how important Victory was in my life. The Victory magazine and me going to my mom every Christmas being like, hey, I want to order $300 worth of merch from here. Can I do that, please?
And yeah, for me too, which is why it was like kind of surreal that was where I was able to get my first, you know, my first anything working in music was at this label that I had been listening to for so long and like buying records and shirts and this, that, and the other thing. I don't even know, like, I guess I never thought that it was like an attainable goal. And then it just kind of, you know,
right,
happened.
Right.
So anyway,
were you freaked out when you were going into there as far as like interview is concerned, or were you just kind of like, all right, I got to try to play this cool?
Oh my God, I was totally freaked out, but I played it super cool. Like, I mean, I was young. I was, I think, 20. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't really know anything aside from the fact that, like, I loved music. Like, I'm pretty sure in my interview there, I was like, I'd been, you know, had, like, some jobs, like, some office jobs and whatever, but I think, like, my selling point on myself was like, yeah, so, like, Snapcase is, like, my favorite band, you know, like... It was totally surreal. It was really cool.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. But yeah, so the label was obviously in that transition phase of like, that's what they were known for. And then obviously signing all the bands like, you know, Taking Back Sunday and Thursday and Hawthorne Heights and all that stuff was swirling around. So was I presume it was a really exciting time to kind of be at the label and watch all these like crazy growth steps happening kind of all around you.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
It was so awesome because, like I said, like when I got into it, it was like that's when the label was kind of on the cusp of, you know, breaking out of just being like a punk and hardcore brand, if you will. Like, you know, I'd gone in there and like that's when I started working there. Thursday's Full Collapse had just come out. And that was, as you and I both know, just like a monumental album for the label and for the genre and kind of beyond. So I started at a really special time when I got to, I guess, see the ins and outs of what happens when a label has that kind of growth and how to, I guess, kind of keep that, you know, have it continue and like all the bands that were signed after that and before that and, you know, how the label had diversified. And it was really, really incredible thing to watch.
For sure. Because I think it does... Honestly, it irks me, and I kind of feel like, I don't feel weirdly protective. I feel protective over the legacy that obviously, you know, Victory and Tony in general has created, where it's just like, obviously, it's really easy for people in the past, you know, 10 years or so to just be like, oh, like the fucking worst. And it's just like, but at the same time, it's like you have to look at what obviously came before that as well, where it's like the momentum that, like you're talking about, that time had, where it was like, you know, you guys were pouring gasoline on fire, and it was like unbelievable to watch that growth of like, you know, a band coming through Southern California on tour, playing in front of 200 people, and then the next time they come through, they're playing in front of 1,000 people, and that's like 6 months, and you're just like, how the fuck does that happen?
Yeah, it was mind-blowing, and I still to this day feel super lucky that I was able to experience all that firsthand. Yeah. It was like a really, truly beautiful thing to watch, especially with the band Thursday. you know, they were playing like huge radio shows. And like, you know, I remember seeing them in Chicago at like a Q101, which is like the alternative station here, at like one of their festivals, playing in front of literally thousands of people and being on stage and being like, holy shit, you know?
Right.
Like, you know.
So how did you I guess, you know, it sort of internally move up to where obviously PR, like, you know, because you ended up like towards the end of your tenure there, you were kind of like PR, A&R, like you were kind of, you know, doing multiple things at the label. So how did that sort of evolution kind of happen internally?
So like I said, my first job there was just a secretary. I think I was only in that position for maybe 6 months because I was really... like I said, I've always been really passionate about music, and I was very like forthcoming about my, you know, wanting to do more than just be a secretary at the label. So I think my first promotion was like running the street team, which was cool, which is a really great way to network across the country. And some of those kids who are on the street team, I still talk to this day, which is insane. And then from running the street team, I started doing advertising, I think. And then I started doing video promotion, which was cool. And then I started doing tour publicity. And then, and then that's like when I quit around when I was doing video and PR and also A&R, as you know. But I had everyone there, like there was never like a specific A&R person. Everyone just kind of, there was a band that you were into, you'd kind of bring it to a meeting and everyone in the office would talk about it and sign them if they were into it or pass if they weren't, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's true. It was always... It seems so interesting, obviously, how that process worked internally, just like as I got to obviously know you and the ins and outs of how Victory worked at that time. And it was interesting to see where it was like, yeah, you were doing PR, but at the same time, it was like so many bands were going to you directly because you already had this great relationship with them. And so it was, I'm sure it was an interesting navigation playing a middle person. You know, I'm not looking for stories or anything like that, but just the idea of you being like, hey, we want to talk to Stephanie because, you know, she'll be able to help us out and be able to do this. But then also you obviously, you know, you had a boss and you were reporting to a person, being able to be like, oh no, like this is what's happening. Like, you know, no one's going behind your back or anything like that. You had to be in this weird, dual role there, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, a lot of people there had A&R duties, which you can tell by how diverse the label was at the time. It's like if I had just been the only, if I was the only A&R person, the whole label would have just been like super heavy, you know,
right.
Stuff I listened to. But it was a healthy mix, which is, I think, due to everyone having kind of a say in what bands were brought on. So
yeah, the only other thing I wanted to pry into in regards to Victory was the fact, like, kind of like how you're mentioning anecdotally that story of, you know, watching Thursday at, you know, the Q101 thing. were there any more sort of like concrete moments in your head of those sort of wild experiences of like, oh my gosh, like here was this band that like no one knew about, and then all of a sudden, you know, like Hawthorne Heights obviously is a prime example of like no one knew that band, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got gold records hanging on your wall to attribute the fact that they sold so many records. Like, any other sort of anecdotal moments that you can remember of being like, this is fucking insane, this is happening?
Oh, for sure. There were some absolute life-changing moments. Like you mentioned Hawthorne Heights. That one was a little bit more formulaic because we had already gone through Taking Back Sunday at that point and Thursday at that point. So it was kind of like those of us working there kind of already knew what to do. The Taking Back Sunday thing still to this day is like, I could just gush about that band and working with them. It was such an amazing experience. And for me professionally, like I had just started doing video promo. That's when, you know, video networks were like MTV and Fuse and whatnot were still playing videos constantly. And it was like a full-time job to actually be getting your videos on those channels. But I remember getting Taking Back Sunday on TRL when that was still a show. And that was like an absolute life-changing career moment for me, like sitting in the office, watching a little TV over my desk and seeing them like on Total Request Live, which you remember how big that shit was at the time. It was like, you know, like actual pop stars. And here we have this like, you know, this little label in Chicago and this little band from New Jersey, you know, on this TV screen. It was kind of mind-blowing. And then it was like a moment where I realized I could actually be good at what I did, you know, like I was seeing the results. So that was super gratifying. I think another one, from working there, like another band that I don't even know if there was like one necessarily monumental moment with them, but, the band Between the Buried and Me is a band that That was actually the first band that I had ever like it was my first A&R project. I remember seeing that band, a really small show in Cleveland, Ohio. It was a little festival, and I was just blown away by their performance and kind of like started talking to them, and we became friends, brought them to the label. They got signed, and watching them, I think while I worked there, they put out, we re-released their self-titled album, and they put out the Silent Circus in Alaska while I was still there. And just immediate exponential growth with that band, because they were like, you know, they were a little band from North Carolina, just absolutely incredible musicians. And it was kind of like, we signed them, we put out the record, the stars aligned, and they just blew up. And as I'm sure you know, they're still an incredible band doing incredible things, you know, still selling tons of records and touring and just doing things the right way. And it was just, it was a pleasure to watch them. It still is a pleasure to watch them continue to grow and release music.
Yeah, to be there, like you were saying, sort of on the, giving the band the foundation of just like how they could obviously build their career moving forward. It's like, that's an awesome thing to be able to, you know, 10 to 15 years later, look back on it and be like, dude, they're still a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just the whole experience was a huge learning experience for me. Cause like I said, it was the first band that I had ever like, you know, really had my hands on, and they went on to do amazing things, and it was every step of the way was something new for me, and it was so exciting.
That's awesome. I wanted to poke at something tiny that you said in there that I think is, I think a lot of people, especially when you do start to work at stuff when you are really young, you know, it's that sort of imposter syndrome where you're just like, dude, I can't believe I'm here. This is weird. Why are you like paying money to me to like work this stuff that I care about? And like, but you mentioned like with the TRL and Taking Back Sunday experience where that was when it kind of dawned on you like, hey, I'm actually like good at this. Like this is something that I was able to, you know, bring to fruition and make happen. Was that a pretty weird moment for you to like, I guess, have that recognition of the fact that you were good at something?
It totally was. Like you said, it was like when I was doing that job, I was just like, this is so great. I just love what I do. I hope I'm doing a good job. You know, because it's like I didn't know a lot then. I had never done that before. And that like that moment, I was like, oh, holy shit. Like my hard work actually paid off. This is a thing that I, along with a team of people and a band who wrote a really incredible record, but this is a thing that I helped make happen, and it was amazing.
yeah. And then you left Victory, so like in the mid 2000s or something like that. So basically at that point you were going on your own, and like with that, I presume that was that the original plan, or was it like, hey, I just need to leave Victory and then I'll figure out what's happening, or where was your head kind of at?
Yeah, I had no clue. I just quit. I quit in 2005, 2006,
okay.
Something like that. I just quit. I had no plan, really. I was just going to, like, take some time off. Didn't really know what I wanted to do. Wasn't sure if I wanted to stay in music. I was kind of burnt out at working at labels and whatever. And I remember it wasn't even a week after I quit. I got a phone call from my friend Carl Hensel, who, I don't know, do you know him? Do you know Carl?
I do.
Great guy. So I knew Carl. He was in a band on Victory called Martyr AD.
Yes.
They had like broken up or whatever. And Carl had moved to Boston and he was working at a label called Bridge Nine. And he was label managing. And so he found out that I quit Victory and he calls me and he was like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. I just like quit my job. I don't know what's going on. And he asked me, he's like, do you think that you would ever like do independent publicity? And it kind of hadn't crossed my mind yet just because I literally had no plan. And so I was like, let me think about it. And I called him back and I was like, yeah, I mean, that's something I could do. Like, are you guys looking to hire? And he was saying, yeah, you know, Bridge Nine lost their publicist and needed somebody to work on a couple records. And I guess the rest is history. He was, Bridge Nine was my first client. And if it wasn't for Carl calling me, I'm not sure that I guess I would have formed an independent publicity company, although I'm sure I would have at some point, but that was certainly the catalyst at the time. And then started working with Bridge Nine and then started picking up some other labels here and there. And
right. The so were you going through some sort of like real soul searching moments, I'm sure, like obviously, like you said, because you quit Victory and you didn't even know if you wanted to kind of continue down the music path. Was it one of those things? I mean, this is kind of two questions wrapped up into it, but like, I'm sure your parents were kind of watching you, you know, do cool things at the label. And then like when you quit, like, was there, you know, concern on their end where they were like, hey, like, so are you still going to do this music thing? Like, how about you do some like real job stuff? Or like, or was that, or were they just supportive in general?
They're so supportive in general. They've like, I've done some weird shit in my life. I mean, not super weird, but they've just been like, yeah, man, whatever you want to do, like, we'll help you chase your dreams kind of thing. But they had seen me. I mean, when I quit Victory, I was burnt out. Like, I had been worked to the bone and just kind of needed a break. And, you know, that was my only experience working in the industry. So part of me was afraid that that's how it was always going to be. Like, you know, what if I stay working in music and, you know, I have a heart attack at like 25, you know? But then obviously I realized that that wasn't the case, and working for myself was awesome, and working for other labels is super awesome.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yemi's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that!
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to the Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus is real hip-hop and R&B.
Yeah.
Was it difficult for you to kind of, I guess, muster up the courage to, you know, do the thing on your own, even though, like you said, only like a week had obviously passed and, you know, having one client like for something that you didn't even know you wanted to start? Was it difficult for you to kind of like, all right, this is the path, rather than just like, oh, I'll dip in my toe here and like, but I got to think about something else. And although if this thing doesn't work out, this whole independent PR thing doesn't work out.
Honestly, no. I mean, everything that I do, and I think that you know this about me, like pretty much everything that I do it 110%. Like balls to the wall, like I'm not going to half-ass it. I started working independently and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to run with this. And I'm still running with it. I did take a little break, I stopped working in music full-time. So like, okay, so just to go back, like 2005, 2006, I quit Victory. I started doing like full-time independent music publicity with Bridge Nine and various other labels. And then in like 2008, I got a job offer with an independent film company doing publicity. So I took that on as my full-time job, semi-briefly though. It lasted about a year, and then I just realized my heart was not into film. But that being said, I also still kept a few music clients on the side. So after my day job working in film, I would go home at night and work on all my music stuff. So it was something that I never lost any passion for. And if anything, over the years, it's just gotten, you know, more and more serious.
The you mentioned this earlier, obviously, like one of the major reasons you left Victory is because you were so burnt out. And, you know, I mean, I always remember every time I came through Chicago and and hung out with you, and, you know, we definitely did the, sitting with each other and having real deep conversations about both of our label experiences. The pressure that I was watching you feel and sort of the burnout that you were feeling, how have you obviously taken that and not, because since you do work for yourself, you can pretty much put, you know, 18 hours a day into it because you are the one determining your own workload. How have you kind of like taken that experience and been like, all right, there needs to be some semblance of balance. Otherwise, you know, I will burn myself out again pretty quickly.
Dude, it's a really fine line. Like, I have a really insane work ethic to begin with. And when I worked at Victory, I got super burned out because I had an insane work ethic and we were expected to have an insane work ethic. So it was just like super nonstop, 24 hours a day, all the time. And now that I'm on my own, I do, you know, work long hours and I'm kind of never not working, but it's just a balance that I kind of had to find on my own. Like I have to, you know, I actually have a pretty like strict schedule, like routine for myself. Like every day I'm off the computer at a certain time and I'm on the computer at a certain time. And, you know, I've just had to set limitations for myself, but it actually wasn't hard because I've been on the other side of it where I got so, you know, so exhausted and burnt out that it was just like, okay, this is a thing that I need to make sure that I do so I can continue to do my job and actually be good at it and not just be this like absent space cadet because I'm constantly doing 1,000 things at once. And even like, I even like with my workload, only allow myself like X amount of projects to be working on at a time because I know that it's all I can handle and I want to do a good job and I don't want to feel like shit and I don't want to feel crazy and overworked. It's just a balance I've had to find.
Right. Yeah. Cause that is difficult, especially when it's like, you know, I find it obviously very interesting too, where it's like, you haven't taken the typical approach of, you know, like naming some PR company. It's like you've done the business obviously under your name, and the, you know, the branding of yourself, you've never been concerned about that. I find it so interesting because obviously most other people completely swim against that grain or just like, oh, I need to have a name for myself in order to feel like I'm legitimate or people will take me seriously. But it's like, obviously you have chosen completely against that. So that I presume that was a very deliberate decision.
Yeah, it was. My work, I guess, speaks for itself, and people hire me to do my thing for them. So it's like, you know, I'm very behind the scenes, and I guess I don't feel like I needed like to hide behind a company to do that. It's myself and an assistant, and I literally have my hands on every single thing I do, and it's all me. And I think people hire me because of that. So I want it to be known that this is me that's working on it. I'm a real person. I have an assistant who does background stuff, but I, you know, will start and finish a project and I will do it to the absolute best of my abilities.
Right. Right. And this kind of goes along with the question of balance as well, where it's just like, because it's really easy. For both men and women that are involved in, you know, independent music in general, it's very easy to, want to be with people, date people that are obviously immediately surrounding you in regards to like, oh, people in bands and other people are going to shows and like completely be consumed by it. But it's like, obviously, your husband is a tattoo artist. Obviously he has a connection with music and knows everything that you're working, but I presume it's also nice to obviously have something beyond just like two people existing in the same exact universe talking about the same exact things over and over.
Oh God, of course. I mean, it helps that we certainly understand he understands where I come from and I understand where he comes from because he comes from the same background. It's just professionally, we don't do the same thing and it's very nice. Like when he gets home from work, I can kind of talk about what I do, but it's not, you know, it's not all we talk about, which is a very good thing.
Right. You're not talking about this is what happened on the internet today. This was so crazy because this band did this thing.
Yeah. He'll just look at me and give me like an eye roll and then I know to stop.
That's funny. But I presume that took some navigation for you to realize that it's like, because I myself, like if I was dating a girl who was really involved in the music scene, it was definitely one of those things where it was just like, if that's all we have to talk about, then like, this isn't really a solid foundation. Did you have to kind of navigate that yourself as well?
Wait, I'm not sure what you're asking.
No, basically just like trying to figure out like, you know, when you were dating people and you were, you know, obviously going to shows and doing all that and working at label, did you have to kind of realize that like, oh, like maybe it would be nice to, you know, be with a person that isn't exactly completely as piped into music as I was?
Oh God. Yeah. Especially working in it. Cause you need a break. Like you need to have a real life outside of it, which is super important. That, and that comes like how I mentioned kind of having like the balance, like the work balance. I think a work life balance is especially important, especially when you work in a field such as ours. It's like, it's pretty easy, I feel, to get out of touch with the real world when so much of your day is spent like, oh, what are people saying about this song premiere I just did on this, you know, fucking message board or whatever. Like, right. It's good to be able to like get out and do other things and have other interests and hobbies and have a partner that supports you in your work and also your extracurricular stuff to keep a healthy balance.
Right. Yeah. Keep a perspective and realize that like, yeah, like the sky isn't falling if this particular, like you said, this premiere didn't like get as many streams as you wanted to or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin's really good about helping me with that stuff.
That's good. And I'm sure just because of, I mean, obviously, like so many of the projects that you've worked recently, just because you've kind of expanded your own resume in regards to, you know, not just working, you know, metal and hardcore records, you definitely work, you know, whatever, Def Heaven Record, Paul Bearer, like, you know, Chelsea Wolfe, like a lot of the stuff that would be, I like to personally define as artistic metal. That's my own descriptor on it. I'm sure that's obviously opened you up to so many different experiences because so many different outlets are like paying attention to those sort of bands. Whereas like, you know, you could have never taken a, you know, a Half Heart or something like that to, you know, Pitchfork or whatever. How has that been? Obviously, because you're expanding your roster, I presume it's exciting, but how was it when you kind of first started to work those sort of type of bands? Was it like pretty exciting because you could talk to people that you never would have been able to talk to before?
Absolutely. So I never worked with Chelsea Wolfe.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. But so yeah, so like, you know, like getting started with independent PR, first client, you know, a hardcore label, you know, had kind of stayed in that realm for a little while. And then I started working with labels like Death Wish, and their roster, while Heavy Music roster is a little different, as you know, as I know that you follow them, but, I think the first record that I worked with them, that was like, oh, holy shit, I'm really good at this again moment when it was a little bit different was Death Heaven Sunbather. That was like the equivalent of like my Taking Back Sunday TRL moment all over again. It was such a beautiful thing to watch that record like from start to finish, like watch it be recorded. Put the work in to get it set up for its publicity campaign, watch them go on tour. You know, the things that that band did, the music that they wrote, allowed me, it made it easy for me to do my job. It made it easy for me to hit up people at Pitchfork who wasn't necessarily, you know, like I had a relationship with, but by no means, you know, was I super close to these people just because a lot of the music that I worked with at that time, didn't really warrant me pitching them, if that makes sense. But that was like an absolute like cornerstone record. Like working with Deathwish has been amazing. I think that pretty much every record they put out is incredible in its own regard. But Sunbather was just such a big deal for everyone. And I think like even going into it, like when we had heard like the demos and like when the recording came back, everybody was just like, holy shit, like this is legit. And it certainly wasn't accidental. It was very calculated and it was very, you know, lots of pitching and lots of, you know, at least on my end, it was a really, really beautiful experience. And it's even better to watch and see where they're at now.
And then
working with Def Heaven opened so many other doors for me. Like I feel like my career trajectory has reflected, I guess, my own personal shifts in taste, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I started off as like, you know, kind of punk and whatever, and then like got like, you know, more into hardcore and like metal. And then now as I'm getting older, it's like I'm into, you know, the thinking man's metal, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, like bands like Paul Bearer. I got to work on the Foundations of Burden album, which was another just absolutely mind-blowing record and an incredible experience and an amazing group of people. And that was really special. And it was really amazing to watch all of the work that, you know, all the super calculated work that we've been able to do, as far as like making like a publicity plan and like letting it rip and having it actually succeed and work the way we wanted it to happen. That was another just absolute career highlight for me.
And how is it? Because I'm always curious. It's one of those things where it's like, obviously, you know, most of the PR work that you put into it is obviously the lead up of the record, and then, you know, a couple months after the fact. But what is it when, like, you know, obviously using those two records as an example, where it's like there was, you know, so much interest for such a long and sustained period of time, where how do you, like, you know, after the fire is already, you know, caught and people are hitting you up left and right, is that almost like just as hard to be able to navigate, like, all right, is this a good look? Is this like a serious thing? Like, should we pursue this? And like, or do you feel like the actual buildup of the record is harder? I'm just curious.
I think the buildup is harder because, like, going into it, like, every project, like, I'll put together kind of like a, whether a small band or a large band, I'll put together kind of like a press plan, what I think I can get, what I would like to get, make sure we're all kind of on the same page. And sometimes, frankly, shit doesn't happen. And you have to like work really, really, really hard to actually make it happen, you know? And that's a hard part for me. It's kind of like, I don't mind like the kind of firing squad when people are constantly requesting things from me and we have to figure out whether or not it's good look. That's a great problem. I love being in that place. But I think that the real shit is like the actual album setup. It can get a little tough sometimes. Like I said, especially if people aren't responding the way you want them to, and you just have to work as hard as you can to get there.
That's actually an important point I was going to ask about too, where it's like I'm sure most of your job too is the idea of managing expectations, because it's like, I mean, I could probably apply that to most things in the music industry of just like, all right, like this is what we're shooting for, but like, we don't necessarily know if we're going to get it. And, you know, sometimes people, you know, whatever, managers, bands maybe come to the table with some unrealistic ideas and then you have to try to like talk them back. What's been your kind of experience with that sort of, you know, I guess maybe a strategy or a plan that you have in your head in order to be like, hey, I want to be real with you, but we are still going to kick ass, but I want to be real with you.
I don't have to talk people off of a ledge very often. I think that usually the type of clients that I have are generally very realistic and very open to whatever I have to say. Again, I'm very fortunate in that regard because a lot of people don't have that luxury. I don't think I've ever actually had a problem where expectations were too far off or not met or whatever. I think it's just being like, I'm pretty brutally honest with people. Like if shit's not happening, I'll be like, you know, shit's not happening. I'll show you all the work that I'm doing and who I'm talking to, and this is what I'm getting back. And it's important just to be really open and honest in every single point of a publicity campaign. Just to keep people on the same page. Like you have to do it. Like I'm not here to blow smoke up your ass. I'm here to do a good job, and I'm going to do everything that I can, and I'm going to communicate with you in very real time about what's going on, just so it's not, you know, 2 days before an album release and I have to call you and be like, hey, so remember that conversation we had 3 months ago about setting up the record? Well, I couldn't make any of that happen, so here's what you're left with. You know?
Yeah, totally.
I'd rather just be there every step of the way and just be very communicative about and honest about what's happening.
Right. Yeah, you're not just dropping off a pile of crap at them, like, you know, a week before the record.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's the best way to manage expectations is just from the get-go, set it up the way that you think you can do it. And if things aren't happening, be honest in real time, you know, just to keep people in the loop.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's two last things I want to hit on before I let you go. Was the idea that obviously, because like you mentioned, it's literally just you and obviously, you know, one other person that you work with, I'm sure that now, because you obviously have so many successful records under your belt, you know, people have kind of come at you being like, oh, how about you work with us and like, do, you know, like be our label PR person. And like, you know, I'm sure offers have come to you, in that regard, but you seem to me just obviously completely, content at obviously the level you're at, like, you know, or would you like to hire more staff and like have this sort of support system underneath you? Or is it like, no, I'm really managing this well, and I really, really like the kind of level that I'm at.
That's a good question. Like, as much as I like to grow, and I am growing, every year that I've been working independently has been better than the one before it, I just know that I'm such a psycho, and like, I have to literally have my hands in everything I do. I need to be in control of what I'm working on, especially because like I take my responsibility very, very seriously. If someone's hiring me on and we agree to work together, like, that is all consuming for me for the duration of however long I've agreed to work. So as much as I'd say like, oh yeah, I'd love to have a team of like all these people underneath me, I know that I cannot like let go of enough work to let other people work on it for me. So I think that I just want to continue building in the same way that I have. And I like being in charge, and I like steering my own ship, and I like being in control of the clients that I'm working with and being able to take on projects that I love because I love them, not because I need to pay a staff, you know? And I think that that's important, and that's what keeps me going and helps me work so hard, is that I have such a personal investment in every single record and every single band that I work with that I have to do a good job, and I want to do a good job, and I know that I can do it on my own, I guess.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense, because I do think it's that weird thing of, you know, ambition, where it's like some people, the notion is to always be growing, otherwise, like, you know, you're dead. But then it's like, if you do get to a certain level that you personally are comfortable at, it's sustainable, it's like, why do you need that next like big thing? Because really, you know, satisfaction in general like never exists. It's not like a band like Coldplay is not like, oh man, I really wish that we could be the Rolling Stones. They're totally having those conversations of like, how can we be timeless? You know, it's like there's no level of success that will bring you that ultimate, I'm at the mountaintop and that's it.
Yeah, for sure. I just feel super, every day I feel really lucky that I get to do what I do professionally, and I get to do it on my own terms, and I'm able to work on things that I care so much about and have such a meaningful job, you know? And every year that I work, it's a little bit better than the next. So I guess I'm doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a positive trajectory.
Yeah.
Now this is my pet theory, and you can either agree or disagree with this, but the, obviously there tend to be, just whatever, categorically speaking, it tend to be a lot of females that are involved in PR in general. And I personally have always attributed to the fact that, you know, first of all, guys are dumb in general. So that we'll go ahead and put that as a sort of a premise that I have. You don't need to agree with me. but so guys are dumb. And like there's that notion where it's just like, you know, sometimes, again, statistically speaking, there are a lot of guys making sort of editorial decisions, whether it's they're running the website or they're, you know, the music editor or whatever. Across the board, it seems to be more males and females that are in that position. So my conclusion is that usually guys being dumb and women filling PR roles, that, you know, women, not saying that you need to be like, you know, flirtatious or anything from that perspective, but, you know, guys are just like, oh, wow, like a girl's being nice to me. And like, you know, oh, like they're talking to me about this record. Like, again, I'm painting a very naive picture here, but I've just always noticed that sort of weird thing where it's just like, oh, like I'm talking to a girl. Like maybe I can like, maybe something can happen if I'm nice to them. Again, like I said, I'm painting a very broad picture. But it's just been one of those things where it's like that, just that weird dynamic that I've personally noticed where it's like, huh, like, I mean, I can't believe that it's obviously by accident that these sort of roles have kind of landed to where they have. But yeah, I don't know. Just, I want to put it out there to see if you had any, if you wanted to pick apart that or agree with certain aspects of that.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe some dudes feel good when chicks talk to them. Yeah. I don't know. I think that maybe a lot of women do PR just because women are fucking worker bees, man. Like,
yeah.
You know, we may or may not be like, I don't know, stronger, whatever. I mean, we are, but I just think that a lot of women are in PR because like women work really fucking hard, and it's a really arduous job, and you have to be really on the ball and I guess some dudes just like to talk to chicks, and we like to talk. So
right. No. Yeah, like I said, it's a pet theory that I've just always I've always observed, where it's just like, you know, if you're painting very broad stereotypes, it's like, you know, like super nerdy music dude, and then like a girl calls him up and be like, hey, can you feature this record? And he's like, of course I can. Like, that sounds great. And it's like, yeah, then the cycle goes on. But again, like I said, I'm painting a very stereotypical broad picture. But
yeah. I wish that worked for me more often.
Totally.
That's like, my job a lot easier.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, this is probably from like a PR person just starting, and then like, you know, a person who has a Tumblr page, you know, it's like, this is a very like minimal idea that I'm extrapolating to the industry as a whole. So I encourage everybody to not really listen to what I just said, but at the same time, it's a funny theory that I've had. So well, Stephanie, thank you so much for obviously being on the complete opposite side and being featured in ways that you've never been featured before. I appreciate it.
I know. I hope I did okay. I don't know if interviews are going to be my thing now.
No, you're... this could be your whole new world, where you will all of a sudden start fielding interview requests for yourself, and you, like you mentioned before, you are your own PR person. So,
dude, I doubt it. I don't know how my bands do this shit. Like, it's like kind of nerve wracking.
Well, how about just imagine like four more after this?
That's terrible. Now I feel bad. I'm going to cancel all my dance interviews today.
but then all four of those interviews are 15 minutes apiece, and they're going to be asking you questions that you have been asked like a million times before. How do you get your band name?
Oh God. Also, I will say, so I listen to your podcast, you know, often, aside from just having like my clients on there, but in general, and I always like, I've gotten a few like shout outs, if you will. And I always hear you guys like, I mean, I don't know if she's listening or not, but like Stephanie Marlowe, I'm always listening. I'm always listening. And I always hear when you guys mention my name, and I thank you for that. So.
Of course. No, of course. Yeah. And that was another reason where it's like, I would be remiss if I did not have the person who has been tangentially mentioned in multiple interviews on the show, where it's like, oh yeah, like you're an important person in the, in the cog that makes the machine go. So of course, but
yeah,
I like
I'm
that.
Listening. Just so you know, I'm always listening.
I know. I like that. I am the ever present eye looming down on you.
Exactly.
So that's Stephanie. Isn't she great? She's the best. So thank you very much, Stephanie, for letting me turn the tables on you and being like, oh, wow, so this is what all my bands go through. She actually said that to me, not after the conversation, but was as we were ramping up to it, she was just like, oh, this is weird. I've never done this before. So I was very appreciative for her, you know, peeling back the veil, so to speak. So anyways, the editor this week is Anthony. Anthony's back. Anthony Patera. He is in a band called Zombie, and hopefully he's enjoying this process, because if he does, then he's going to continue on. But, you know, we're doing a little trial run here in January. But thank you very much, Anthony. I really, really appreciate it. And visit the show's website, 100wordspodcast.com, and follow us on Twitter. You know, all that good stuff in order to communicate with the show. And last line of communication, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. Write me. Because I always enjoy hearing from people who get something out of the show. Anyways, until next week, please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.